over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be talking to you about this series. We're going to be teaching on a series called Your Best You, and we're going to do this for the next few weeks, and I want to help you become your best you. I want this to be, and I believe God wants this to be, your best year that you've ever had. And you say, well, last year was a great year. Well, I want this to be even better. And I believe it starts with becoming your best you. I want it to be the best year for you financially. Maybe the year for you to get out of debt or you know, get just finances in order or whatever that may look like for you. Or your best year relationally in your marriage or with friends or with coworkers. I wrote this down as well. I want you to show up to work and love what you get to do each day. You know, just get to put your head around the purpose that God has for you. I want you to begin to live the life that God has for you. And I believe God also wants you to have your best year yet in 2020. I believe it's going to be a great year for you and for us as a church. And so I'm excited to launch this series, Your Best You. But in order for you to do that, you're going to have to lean in this series and listen in. And if you miss, by the way, any of the weeks, make sure you go to our website and listen online. And maybe go back and even re-listen to them so that they kind of get inside of you. Also, this is really important. The brother of Jesus made a statement one time that I think is absolutely true because it's in the Bible. But the brother of Jesus, James, said, hey, listen, don't just come to hear the word of God. You got to actually do what the word of God says. If not, you're basically an idiot because then you're just wasting your time. So you have to do what the Bible says to do. So that's James's words, not my words. That's the Bible. But what I'm telling you is don't be listening into this series. This is a series that's going to have a series of action steps to it that you're going to have to go home and do in order to draw the most out of it so that you can become your best you. Does that make sense to you? Got that? All right. Well, today I want to talk to you about the first thing that you have to do to be your best you. There was a study done that said 10 to 12% of gym memberships start in January. Did anyone sign up for a gym membership, by the way, in January? Nobody here? Nobody did in our first service either. So it tells me that all of you work out already or you're not even interested. You know, you're just like, yep, I'm not doing it. All right. I don't know what it tells us, but the average signups actually is around 8% in other months. So you got 12% in January, but then the other months around 8%. In fact, and this was, I couldn't believe this when I read this. This is real research, okay? There's actually a research team that does this. There's been research done on predicting the specific day that people will fall off the wagon. It's actually called Fall Off the Wagon Day. Did you know that that's an actual day? Okay, when I read this, I thought, I can't believe there's an actual research team. You know, I know there's research for, you know, medical things, but there's a research team that actually researches this. Basically, it's a team of people that get together and they bet on the day you're going to fail. That's essentially what's happening, you know, that you're going to give in, you're going to eat the Twinkie or whatever. You know, they're betting against you. So the day, just so you want to know, is February 9th, 2020 is the day they're predicting for you to fall off the wagon if you're eating healthy and getting back in shape, that kind of day. So basically, if you're wanting to get fit and live healthy, statistics will say and research teams will say most of us will fall off the wagon within the first 40 days of 2020. All right, so they're betting on you to fail. That's just the way it is. So here's what we learned from this. You say, why we share that? Here's what we learned from that. First, if you're a gym owner, you love January because that's when all the money comes in. Then this kind of may be a struggle the rest of the year. But we also learned that most people who attempt to make physical changes don't last long. How many of you have ever set a goal to make some physical changes, eat healthy, work out, and you did not fulfill what you had set out to do at some point in life? See all the hands. See, you're part of it. You're the ones that bet on it. You know, February 9th, you're done. At best, you know, that's what they're saying. So, you know, actually, I've read even more study about this. You've ever heard the term that it takes 30 days to create a habit? Have you heard this? That's not true at all. Actually, it's the minimum, the average is 66 days in order to create a new behavior, but some people can take up as long as 254 days depending on their scenario. There's actually research done on that too. Anyways, the point is, of all of this, people tend not to last long when it comes to make physical changes in their body or New Year's resolutions, those kinds of things. And here's why. Because, and I believe this is true, we decide what we want to do. We decide what we want to do before we decide who we want to be. And I'll say it again just to kind of think about this for a moment. We decide what we want to do before we decide who we want to be. One of the most common questions we are asked throughout our life is, what do you want to do? And we get asked this since we're little kids. We get asked, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? In our culture, it's constantly asked this question about what do you want to do? I remember being around, you know, 6, 7 years old or something and reading Dr. Seuss' book. And there was a book about, you know, different kind of professions. You know, there's like pilots and things like that. And you just kind of go through this book and you learn about all these different jobs. And I remember being asked when I was a young kid, 5, 6, 7 years old, and most of you were asked this question, what do you want to be when you grow up? As if they know, you know, they have no clue. But we ask kids all the time, what do you want to be? What do you want to do? What do you want to do? And so I remember, you know, being asked that question. People in middle school, right, we get asked this question, you know, what do you want to do when you get into high school? When you get in college, people are constantly asking the question, what do you want to do? When you retire, hey, what do you want to do when you retire? What do you want to do this year? What do you want to hope to accomplish? Our culture centers around the question, what do you want to do? And for most of us in this room, maybe a few of us, but for most of us in the room, we were rarely asked the question, who do you want to be? Rarely did people probably ask you growing up, you know, what kind of spouse do you want to be? What kind of employee do you want to be? Normally, in our culture and our kind of, you know, communities that we live in and operate in on a daily basis, center around the things you want to do, not the person that you want to become. Most of us rarely ever think about that until at some point, maybe later on in life. The problem with this whole kind of reversal, the way we're approaching it, this whole idea about kind of, you know, asking the question, what do you want to do, before ever asking who you want to be, the problem with that is not that trying to think about the thing you want to do is bad. It's not bad to think about the things you want to do and have plans in place and have goals and put all that on your calendar. All that's great. But the reality is, you should never make that decision prior to first deciding who you want to be. You say, why is that? Why should I first decide who I want to be before what I want to do? And here's why. Because of this. Because simply, when we're in this scenario, who we are on the inside determines what we do on the outside. What I mean by this is, who we are on the inside eventually reveals itself on the outside. And all of us know this to be true. I'll paint a couple of pictures just to help you kind of bring this to understanding their practical scenarios. Most of us in this room know somebody or have seen somebody on TV who have lots of money. You know, they have a ton of money. They have the house. They have the cars. They have, you know, the whole designer package. You know, they just live this big life. And whether they're famous or they're an athlete, doesn't matter. And most of us, if not a lot of us, have seen or heard the stories. And we see people who have tons of money. And then at some point in their life, they end up declaring bankruptcy. And you've heard these stories before. You may be one of these stories, or you know someone close that's kind of like that, or maybe they're on the brink of that, and you're thinking to yourself, and most of us think the same thing when we see somebody who has a lot of money and then all of a sudden they go bankrupt. You think what I think, and all of us kind of say this together. We think to ourselves, how did that happen? You know, like, how did that happen? And then you normally say this statement following that. If I had that much money, there's no way that would happen. Like, you know, I'd have in savings and I'd set up the stuff and you just think about all of that. But how did this happen? Here's how it happens. Here's why it happens. Because of that. Right here. Because who we are on the inside determines or eventually comes out what we do on the outside. It eventually reveals itself. Right? Some people jump into power or influence or political power or whatever the case is, and they're a position of power, they run the company, they run the organization, they're high-level, top-tier people, and then they're cheating on certain things or they're breaking laws or whatever the case is, and you're thinking to yourself, man, how did you let that happen? You know, that you work so hard, you got these great degrees, and you got to the pinnacle of your career, and now it's fallen off, and maybe those people sometimes they end up in jail or in prison, and people think to themselves what you think, what I think. They think, how did you let that happen? Because if I was a person of power, if I was a person of influence, man, I would lead, and my whole staff would love me, and I'd treat people this way, you know, and you would think, I would never let that happen. And you can't wrap your head around why these things happen, but this is really the reason why it happens, I'm fully convinced, because who we are on the inside determines what we do on the outside, right? Eventually, it comes out in us. Another scenario, just to get this inside of us, is marriages. Have you ever, any daring people, there was some brave people in the first service, I'm wondering if there's some brave people in the second service, but there was some brave people who raised their hand to this question. Has anyone ever seen another spouse that's attractive? You know, a few of us, I saw one hand go up, then he put his hand like this. I don't know if I should raise my hand right now. Looking around. Okay, so the point is, like, you know, you see other people that are attractive, you know, or maybe famous people, you're looking at, yeah, it's a pretty good-looking couple or a pretty good-looking spouse, you know. But here's what's incredible about that. You've seen some of these marriages. They have the kids. It's all beautiful. They have all this stuff. And then one of them, like, commits adultery on the other. And you're thinking, man, if my wife looked like that, like, I would never, you know. I don't know. You know, you just think there's no way I would let that happen if I had that kind of a life. You know, so you can't wrap your head. Why do these things happen? Why? Because this is just a true thing. This is so important for us to grab. Who we are on the inside determines or eventually comes out what we do on the outside. It eventually comes out. This happens with athletes, happens with people that they get to the place, they get to the pinnacle, they get to this critical moment, and then it all kind of breaks apart and it falls apart or it consumes them. Why? Because who we are on the inside eventually determines what we do on the outside. It eventually comes out in us. And so it's so important for us to deal with the things on the inside so that when we get to the place that we've been wanting to be and where we want to go, we're able to handle it. We're able to manage it. We're able to steward it, if you would, so that it doesn't consume us. Does that make sense? And so this is so important for us to understand as we get into this series about your best you. Because in order for you to be your best you, you're going to have to learn to ask yourself a very important question as it relates to more of who you are, not what you want to do. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Lately, I've been reading the book of Daniel, and I found this to be true in the life of Daniel. And so I want to show you some of this about Daniel, how Daniel made a decision in his life to determine who he was going to be before he ever decided what he wanted to do. And we'll see how it plays out in his life, in the life of Daniel. So if you have your Bibles, you can turn there to Daniel 6, was where we're going to be, and then we'll flip over to 1 in just a minute. But Daniel is a slave. He's a Hebrew, and he's a slave in this context of the story, this part where we're going to read. And he has a great talent, though. I mean, his talent is interpreting dreams, but he's got lots of other great qualities we're going to find out about. He's not only just, he's top tier. He's top tier level. He's the kind of guy you want to bring on your staff. He's the top-notch person. He's the perfect candidate. This is Daniel. He's gone from slavery, but now he's about to be appointed into like this kind of ruling CEO position. Here's what it says in Daniel chapter 6, verse 3. This is all about Daniel. It says, now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities. I mean, this guy's got lots of qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. This guy is about to be CEO of a kingdom. He's gone from slavery, but now he's about to be appointed to be in charge of this whole land. So he's gone from complete poverty kind of a thing and a terrible scenario, bad neighborhood, and he's worked himself to the top, and he's at the pinnacle of his platform, and he's about to take it all. But then it goes on to say, if this begins to happen, verse 4, at this, the administrators and the satraps try to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of governmental affairs. What they basically try to do is tear Daniel down. They say, you know what, Daniel, we don't really want you. So they start to have some gossip. They start looking up social media photos. They start thinking, you know, what do we have against Daniel? Because Daniel, you know, we don't want him to get to the top. And they're just getting a little jealous, you know. Does anybody, you're such a good employee. Your office is so jealous of you. Anybody that at all? That's how it is in my office. I feel like there's just so much jealousy towards me. And I just want to go, no, so, but, you know, this is Daniel. Daniel's, you know, he's so smart, he's so good, he's so talented, all right, and yet people want to tear him down and bring him down, they don't want him. So they seek this whole thing to try to destroy, you know, his movement up, his promotion. So here's what it goes on to say in verse 4 and through 5. It says, but they were unable to do so. They couldn't find anything against him. It says, they could find no corruption in him. In him. They couldn't find anything in him that was wrong because he was, look at this word, trustworthy. He was so trustworthy. I mean, when Daniel said something, he meant it. His yes was yes. His no was no. There was no deceit. There was no lying to him. He was absolutely trustworthy. Look at the character trait of a trustworthy person. It goes on to say further than that, though, there was neither a corrupt part in him. I mean, he had no bad motive in him. He has a pure heart inside of him. And he was not negligent either. I mean, this guy was sharp. He was ready to go to work. He showed up. He worked hard. They couldn't find anything wrong with him. Finally, these men said, "We will never, look at it, I love that. Look at this. We'll never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." The 613 law, all these laws, these Jewish laws. They said the only thing, in other words, we'll ever be able to find against Daniel, the only thing that we could actually say against him is he's not perfect. That's about all we could say about him, because when it comes to trustworthiness, when it comes to character, when it comes to showing up, when it comes to doing what he said he's going to do, he is spot on. He does everything he says, and we don't have any bad dirt on him. And because of that, he gets promoted. They couldn't find anything negative to say about him. For 10 years in youth ministry, I used to tell teenagers all the time, listen and lean in on this. I used to tell teenagers all the time this question. I say, hey, listen, you need to learn to live your life. Make the decision now to live your life in such a way that people can't say a negative thing against you. And when they do, others will step up and say, no way, not them. No way. Not their character. Put your character above all things. This is where Daniel is, and this is who Daniel is, and they try to find the dirt, but they can't. All they could find is that he is exactly who he said he was, a fully devoted follower of God. And that's all that proves to be true in the life of Daniel. Well, the reason they couldn't find any dirt on him is because Daniel had pre-decided that he would be a particular way, that he would live his life, that he pre-decided, this is who I'm going to be. This is so important for you to get. This is who I'm going to be before I ever decide what I'm going to do. Daniel did not know where he was going to end up. He's in slavery. But even as he starts to work himself into this palace and into this position, he had made a determination. He had made a pre-decision before ever getting into the career field, before ever getting out of college, before ever getting into his profession. This is who I'm going to be. If you have your Bible, go over to Daniel chapter 1. Look at this. In Daniel chapter 1, verse 1, at the very top, it says this. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, this is the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Now, you have to know Nebuchadnezzar is a very, very evil king. He is kind of in our minds, the way we can wrap our head around it, would be very similar to Hitler, okay? Just a man who literally his whole life he had plans. He wanted to simply, his whole ambition was to dominate the world. He wanted to consume the world and have full power over all people, and there was no secret about it. In fact, as he traveled through towns, people would say this statement, can a man like this reign over the entire world? This is what would happen when he would show up. And he was a man who was shorter in stature, but they thought, how can a guy like this, this small, this tiny, really want to rule the world? It's because Nebuchadnezzar's heart was so evil, and the way that he was able to kind of get people and rally people around him and cause movement to happen to kill as many people as possible who have nothing to do with what he said or who wouldn't bow to him, who wouldn't worship him. And he's just this evil, evil person in history. This is just a true historical thing. And so this is very similar to kind of a Hitler scenario. So this is the guy that we're dealing with. Then it goes on to say in verse 3, well, then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of the court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. So they've got some slaves, and now they're going to bring in some of the best slaves, okay? It says, young men, now notice the similarity with the whole Hitler thing, if just for context, young men without any physical defect. So this is Daniel too, handsome. Like me, you know, a little bit, looking pretty good, all right? All right, showing some aptitude for every kind of learning, you know, well-informed, quick to understand, qualified to serve. Man, this guy's like, he's a perfect candidate for the job, to serve in the king's palace. And he was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. In other words, I want you to go get the best cream of the crop, find the best slaves, smart guys, bring them in. We'll basically take them over. We'll teach them our ways so that we can become more and more and more powerful to dominate and take over the world. Verse 5. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table, and they were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Among these men chosen from Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Okay, you know them as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel. So these are the group of men that are supposed to come together. They're chosen, they're elected. And verse 8, when I read it, I was like, gosh, look at verse 8. Verse 8 changes everything. Here's verse 8 in this particular scenario. Before Daniel gets promoted, here's what verse 8 says. Daniel had decided, he was resolved, he had set in place. This word resolved is two Hebrew words that simply mean, it's sumlav, S-U-M-L-A-V. It's these two words that come together to mean to set your mind in place. Actually, a better translation would mean to be set your inner man, to set your inner man. The inner man refers to your mind, your soul, your will, your heart, and your emotions. The full part. In other words, we say it this way, you made up your mind. Guys, have you ever had your wife or maybe you know the lady who they made their mind up and you know, there's no way we're changing it? That's the color we're going with. That's the name we're going with. The mind is made up. And you're like, I surrender. It doesn't matter what I say. You know, it doesn't matter because the mind is made up. Daniel was so resolved. He had predetermined. His foot was down. You're not budging it. I have made up my mind, my will, and my emotions. I am set on this and I'm not budging. This is the decision he made before ever getting promoted to his position in the palace. He says, but Daniel resolved. I just want you to think about what he started, where he started. He started with who he was going to be. He says, I'm not going to defile myself. I'm not going to do it. With royal food and wine, I'm not going to eat that stuff. I'm not going there. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. In other words, listen in. Daniel had said, I am not going to defile my God. I'm going to do what my God says to do. And I am going to live my life this way. And I don't care what it costs me. And even though I'm a slave, think about this, being brought into the palace and you're offering me all this choice food. You're offering me this grandest lifestyle. You're offering me to come out of slavery and live in the palace and get a job and get a paycheck. But I'm telling you, doesn't matter what you throw my way, I am resolved. I am setting my mind on this. And I am not coming off my wall. I will serve only my God. I'm resolved in that. This is the decision that Daniel made prior to ever deciding what he wanted to do. He first decided who he wanted to be. Then it goes on to say, and it continues as we'll read through this, as what happens as a result of this. So it says, now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, I am afraid of my lord the king who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than any other young men in your age? Well, the king will then have my head because of you, because he's such an evil king, Nebuchadnezzar. Then Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official has appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants. I love this. He says, please test me. I'm telling you, I'm so convinced with who I am. You want to test my character? Go ahead and test it. I'm telling you, when I tell you something, I mean it. I'm trustworthy. You can stand a post. You can watch and see. Doesn't matter what you throw my way. I trust my God. My mind is made up. For 10 days, test me in this way. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. And then it goes on to continue to say. It says, then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. And so he agreed to this, and they tested them for the 10 days. They only ate the vegetables. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men. See, vegetables are good for you. This is good. Eat your spinach. Than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine, and then he gave simply vegetables to everyone. He said, this is the route we're going. It panned out. You said what you said your God would do, he did. Man, you're trustworthy, man. You are right in line with the God you serve. And because of that, we're going to follow your lead on this. And now we're going to give everybody the vegetables and the water. This is a better way of living your life. You see, you should go vegetarian. It's just better for you. You know, this is the way you should do. This is Daniel. This is what happens in life. I just want you to hear. I want you to catch this. All of this starts with Daniel first deciding who he wanted to be. Now, here's why I say all that to you. Because of these three stools, I want to show this to you. For most of our life and for most of my life, I sat in this stool. And this stool is, what do you want to do? Most of my life, I spent sitting in this stool right here, thinking about what I wanted to do, what I wanted to do, places I want to see, places I wanted to travel, things I wanted to do, kind of house I wanted to live in. I thought about the things that I wanted to do. And I remember anybody as a kid, one of the first jobs I think I ever wanted to have. Do anybody remember the movie Top Gun? Love Top Gun. I think there's a new one already out or coming out. Anybody Top Gun fans? You know, Maverick and, yeah, that kind of thing. Nobody ever wanted to be Goose, you know, for some reason. But, you know, he dies in the movie, in case you didn't know. But everyone wanted to be Maverick, and when I saw this, there was actually a Nintendo game, like the original Nintendo. There was a game called Top Gun, and me and my friends used to sit behind each other and, like, you know, we, you know, shoot down planes or whatever, I don't know. And we were like, yeah, this is what we want to do. I wanted to be a fighter pilot. I thought this would be awesome. And then at some point, I realized some of those people die, and I'm like, I don't want to do that. And then I decided, you know, I wanted to be an athlete. Anybody wanted to be an athlete when they were a kid? You know, you're like, I'm going to be a star. I'm going to be, yeah, probably, you know, some of us, we watched TV shows. And then you saw the movie Rocky, and you wanted to be a boxer. Anybody ever do this at all? You know, and then whatever movie you watched, you know, that inspired you, that's what you wanted to be. You know, that happened to a lot of us. And so then at some point, I think I wanted to be an actor, and then I wanted to be an athlete, you know, and just kind of, and then at some point, I think I wanted to be a high school coach and coach soccer. So I started coaching soccer because I thought that's what I want to do. But then I realized, you know, because I thought summers are off, you know, that sounds good to me, take a couple months off, you know, but then you're like, I don't think I want to do that. Then I got to college, and I actually started thinking about being a lawyer, and I was only one semester away from graduating from an economic degree. I was going to go to law school. I was going to do family law, and really it's about the money, you know. It wasn't about law. Like, I just love law. No, I wanted money, and so, you know, it was just thought about all the things. Most of my life, I spent sitting thinking about what I wanted to do, and the reason, this is the reason, this is the question I was asked the most. What do you want to do? 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 And then the next question that I kind of lived my life around, and I didn't realize it then and recognize it, but the question I began to really put around my life most was the second stool. And I said in this one for a while, not just what I wanted to do, but who I wanted to do it with. I start thinking about, you know, just like a lot of us do, start thinking about relationship. Not just what I want to do, but next question is, who are you going to do that with? You think about marriage. You think about, you know, maybe the future. You think about friends that you want to travel with. You think about getting connected to the right people. Listen, if you're in college or you were in college, you remember this. I mean, life was all about who you know. And so people would push fraternities and sororities. It's all about getting connected to the right people, because in the real world, it's all about who you know, who you know, who you know, who you're going to get connected to, who you're going to get to know. And so you think about what to do. You think about who to get connected with, because that's ultimately going to determine what you do. And so you think about these two scenarios. And rarely did I ever sit and take the time to think about who I wanted to be. I rarely ever took the time. In fact, I remember the very first time I really began to think about who I wanted to be. Not just what I wanted to do and who I wanted to do it with, but I actually took the time to think about who I wanted to be. And it happened in 2012 at a conference. I was a youth pastor, like I said, for almost 10 years, and I was in a coaching network. There was a lady named Jeannie Mayo. And I was in this coaching network for about 2 years, and she would gather youth pastors from around the nation, and we would just go and learn and just kind of grow, you know, in ministry. Well, I went to this conference, and she did a talk called Seven Words, and there was an exercise she had us do. But before I share with that exercise, she made this statement, and I want to share it with you today that it's just stuck with me. She said, dreams are great, dream big, because a lot of youth pastors are like, we're going to reach the world for Jesus, and that was just kind of like the mentality. So dream big. But dreams are dangerous if you don't first build the character you need to sustain your dream. It's so true. You know, that if you don't first have the character to sustain the dream, and for whatever reason this week, marriages have been in my heart. So if you're married, just listen in. You know, if you're not married, listen even more so. So many people get here, they get the dream, they get the marriage, but they don't have the character to sustain it. And then divorce happens. Why? Because they didn't focus on who they wanted to be. All they thought about is what they wanted to do and who they wanted to do it with. And then they get there, and it just doesn't stay sane. All of a sudden, you realize, man, I got to be selfless to stay married. I got to work hard to stay. And they never dealt with stuff from their past or pain that carries over into their marriage. They didn't see it coming. And you're thinking to yourself, man, how did that happen? Married for 15 years. How did that happen? How'd you let that go? Because who we are on the inside, listen to me, who we are on the inside eventually shows on the outside. It eventually comes out. And for Daniel, he said, I got to make a decision first on who I'm going to be. So she put this challenge out there about getting seven words that would help you decide on who you wanted to be. It was the whole sermon that she gave. And so for in this, she had us do this exercise to write seven words on a canvas, and I brought the canvas in. Seven words that we would want to live by. In fact, the way she worded it was seven words that you want people to say about you when you die. And it's kind of weird. In fact, one of the things she actually did to us, and I did this with our teenagers one time in our youth ministry, she actually took us to a graveyard in Atlanta. She took us to Martin Luther King's gravesite and another gravesite as well. That was like, you know, one wasn't enough. Take us to two. And so she put us down this gravesite. I'm sitting, we're sitting around with all these different tombs, and it's kind of weird because you're like, this is weird, and we didn't know where she was going. Like, did I just join a cult? I don't know. It's the coaching network, I thought. But we get there, and she says, I want you to write seven words that, you know, you want people to remember you by or people to say about you. You know, what do you want on your tombstone? These kind of questions really prompting you to think about it. And now as I sit here as a pastor of over 12 years, I've done so many funerals, been a part of funerals, seen it all. And here's what I know about funerals. I've never once, I just want you to know this, and I don't know how much money is in your bank account, and I don't care. Unless you have enough to buy land for the church, I care. But you know, listen, I've never said at a funeral and had somebody stand over, you know, Johnny or whatever and say, Johnny, man, Johnny has $884,000 in his bank account. Man, he's such a great guy. I've never heard someone talk, man, you know, Johnny has 84 trophies and hey, look at all the achievements, man. He's just, no. You sit at a funeral and most of the comments, if not all of the comments, 100% of the time are always about relational. Johnny made me laugh. You know, he smiled at us in the office. He always, you know, welcomed. He was there for me whenever I needed him. Never is it about how much money. God, man, did you see his wardrobe? I mean, his wardrobe was, he was always in designer stuff. I mean, gosh, it's just phenomenal wardrobe. Now, you know, nobody ever talks about that. They always talk about more relational things, how they were there for them, how they loved them, how they cared for them, how they made them laugh, and whatever made them feel. Always about relationships. I found that to be true. There's a guy that authored a book, Stephen Covey, a great author, leadership book called Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And here's what he said in his book. It's really good. He says, what you want said about you is your personal definition of success. What you want said about you is your personal definition of success. Let me tell you something. For me, success is not how big this church gets. That's not success. If you base your success based on your achievements, you are headed in the wrong direction. Because you're going to be in an emotional roller coaster. Whenever the organization is thriving, you'll feel like successful. And when it's not thriving or the dollars aren't coming in, you won't feel successful. Your success should never be tied to your wallet. Never. Or how high you get in the prestigious ladder. No, no, no. He says, whatever you want said about you, and I can promise you when somebody's standing over your grave one day, they're not going to talk about how much money you made. That's a guarantee. They're not going to care. They're going to care about how you made them feel when you were with them. That's the reality. And that's what we do. We've done it ourselves if we've ever been a part of funerals. And so she had us write these seven words. And so these are some of the words that I wrote down. And I made a decision on that day. This is who I'm going to be. And I want you to know, I had no idea I was going to be a church planner at some point. I didn't know how my life was going to shape out. But I had made a decision before anything, before I was married, you know, through all of this stuff. This is the decision I'm making. I think I was actually married at the time. But I had made a decision. This is who I'm going to be, certainly before being a dad. It says this. I wrote down faithful Christian, and I wrote this in quotes, his soul belongs to God. And this still sits in my office to the day, just so that I'm reminded of what success is. I'm just trying to achieve this. His soul belongs to God. Now, this is for me, and I'm not trying to boast on me, like be like me. No, no, I'm just saying this is something that I did for me that said, this is who I want to be. I want to live my life in such a way that when somebody stands over me one day, they say, there is no question about it. He wasn't just a churchgoer. He wasn't just a Christian. His soul belonged to God. His whole life centered around Jesus Christ. And I made a decision. That's how I'm going to live my life. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how much money I'm going to make. I don't know where I'm going to live. But I am predetermining. I'm making the decision to focus on who I want to be before I decide what I want to do. I wrote some other statements down. loving father and a husband, and I could talk on a few of these. I wrote down the word generous, too. Generous, a supportive friend, always there when I needed him. These are just certain statements, and I don't know if I'm achieving all of these, but I'm trying. And generous, you know, I was thinking about this. I shared this with the first service, and I'm not, what I'm about to say isn't because I'm trying to brag or, hey, look at us. No, I'm just trying to tell you, it is so important. Listen, it is so important for you to decide who you want to be. It's more important. It's way more important you decide who you want to be before you ever think about what you want to do. So important. And so I wrote the word generous down. And so when me and Krista got married, we put some core values for our family. And one of our core values is we live to give. We're going to live to give. It's why it's one of our core values here at the church. We wanted to be a generous couple. That's how we chose. As a couple, we decided, I remember us driving on a vacation. I think we were going to somewhere in North Carolina. We're going to Myrtle Beach. We're on this drive. And we started thinking, like, man, what do we want to be known for? What kind of parents do we want to be? We started asking ourselves these questions. What are our values? What are we going to center around? And one of them was about generosity. And so in our personal budget at home, we have a line item that says gifts, right? And it just really is like we're able to just give to people. We put in our budget every single month. This is not tithe. This is not church. This is just we want to be generous people. And for the past 6 years, we've housed people in our home. Like we want to do this because we want to be generous people because we made a decision entering into our family, we're going to be generous. This is who we want to be. And so by default, we're moving in the direction of that. I'm not saying, hey, look at us, we're generous. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying we made a decision. We thought about it. We took the time to go, this is who we want to be. Before ever thinking about what we wanted to do. It's so important that you understand that this gets backwards so often in our culture. And so I wrote down a handful of other words, but that's not really what this whole thing is about. This is really about you and I learning to say and ask this question to become your best you. Who do you want to be? So here's the whole lesson of the day. Rather than starting with a goal of what you want to do, maybe 2020 or this year, that kind of thing, rather than starting with that goal, what you want to do, start with the goal, who you want to become, right? And here's the really cool part. We'll wrap it up with this thought. The who you want to be, this is so true, the who you want to be will do what you want to do. It's an absolutely true problem. The who you want to be will end up doing the thing you want to do. Look at the life of Daniel. Daniel had decided, I am not going to be a person who defiles my God. My mind is made up. I'm resolved in it. My foot is down on it. I won't. This is the, and if you read through the book of Daniel, you should go home, read the book of Daniel. If you read through the book of Daniel, you'll discover that that decision is what ultimately landed him exactly where he wanted to be. Into the leadership, into the place of the palace that he thought maybe never seemed possible for a slave. But the reason he got to the pinnacle of a career wasn't because of just, his work ethic. It was all rooted. The reason, the thing that gets him to the top is his ability to hear God, which all goes back to a decision he made at the very beginning that says, this is who I'm going to be. I'm going to be a person who serves God first. And because of his decision to do that, he gets the place of leadership in the palace, all because he decided who he wanted to be first. I can promise you, when you decide who you want to be, you'll end up doing the things you want to do. But it starts with who, not what, all the time. So here's the big question as we land this whole message today for you. And if you're a parent, if you're a dad, just listen in. Dads, and I got a real serious question for you today. What kind of dad do you want to be? Do you know and is it written down? Have you thought about it? What kind of dad do I want to be? What do I want my children to say about their father when they stand over me one day? What do I want them to say? What do I want my spouse to say? What kind of spouse do you want to be? Do you want to be known as a nagging spouse? And she just nagged all the time. Nag, 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 Seriously. What kind of spouse do you want to be? What do you want your spouse to say about you? And I know it feels heavy, but consider that. What do you want your neighbor to say? What kind of neighbor do you want to be? What kind of neighbor do you want to be? One that complains all the time? Because there's some of you, that's what they'd say about you. It's true. And if you're thinking, I don't know any neighbors like that, you're that neighbor. You're the one. Yeah. Because we all have those neighbors. Now, just what kind of neighbor do you want? Let me ask you this. Listen, what kind of employee do you want to be? What kind of employee do you want to be? I mean, when you leave your job one day, what do you want them to say about you? Man, she worked hard. They worked hard. They gave their best effort all the time. They showed up on time. What kind? Start to think about living your life in such a way from the angle of who I want to be. And here's the biggest question of all. Do you know who you want to be? Have you taken the time to sit in this stool and say, this is who we're going to be? Here's your homework. Here's my action step. Here's my hope for you. If you're a married couple, if you're single, doesn't matter. If you're young, old, doesn't matter where you are. Even if you're not a Christian, doesn't matter. Listen in. Exercise this out. I promise you. Get together as a couple this week. I'm telling you, get together. Don't make the mistake. Don't think about this is what we hope to do when we retire. This is where we want to travel. This is what we want to do. You make this mistake. You'll get there. And it won't be what you hoped it would be because you didn't first have the characters to sustain it. Start to think about what kind of parents do we want to be? Let's write it down. What kind of employee do I want to be? What kind of friend do I want to be? What kind of follower of Jesus do I want to be? Do I want to be a half-hearted follower of Jesus or do I want to be a full devoted follower of Jesus? Do I want to be a halfway, you know, giver with my in regards to tithe? Do I want to be known as a half giver or a full giver? You know, I mean, just think about that. Do I want to be faithful or do I want to be unfaithful? You know, do this homework aside. As a parent, what do I want my kids to say to me? Do I want to be a parent who screams or do I want to be known as a parent who was firm in their words but was full of truth and full of grace? What kind of parent do I want to be? What kind of grandparent do I want to be? What kind of friend, whatever it may be for you in your life? Just take the time this week and consider the question, who do you want to be rather than focusing so much on what you want to do. And if you end up focusing on who you want to be, you'll end up doing the thing that you really want to do. Let's pray. Jesus, help us, God, in this moment. And I pray for each and every person in this room, Lord, that they make decisions on who they want to be. God, help us to live our life in such a way that we reflect you. And I'm fully convinced, and I'm just fully convinced in this moment, God, that if we really took the time to think about who we want to be, it would line up with who you want us to be. Ultimately, God, our life and our purpose in life is found only in you. And so, Jesus, I pray as those would go out and have the courage or bravery to do this exercise, just to consider who they want to be, would ultimately find the them that they were created to be. They would ultimately find who you want them to be. God, because I know that you care more about who we are than what we accomplish for you. Jesus, thank you so much for being so gracious to us, for loving us. It's in your name we pray. Everybody said, amen.